Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term medical plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term medical plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hello, Egg Chasers. It's the Egg Chasers Rugby Podcast, the podcast about rugby that doesn't take itself or the game too seriously. I was about to say, just out of sheer habit, here in the rugby dungeon, but we're not. We're all in our independent TMO shipping containers. Mine in South Manchester suburb of Chorlton. Phil's in the slightly leafier, slightly more suburban suburb of Sale. How you doing, Phil?
Hello, Tim. I'm very good, thank you. Bit surprised that we're not in person this week. But
yeah,
out of the blue, JB. Well, we both saw JB yesterday, and he didn't mention anything about at 4 a.m. this morning. He was heading to Manchester Airport to fly to France to go skiing for the week.
Yeah. I mean, it's quite possible that he arranged that between, I don't know, 10 o'clock last night and 4 o'clock this morning. It's quite possible that he arranged that ski trip and all the logistics that went along with it. But that is. That's peak JB right there. I can see just looking at it that JB has finally read the message with all the information for this meeting. So I think we're going to be joined by him imminently. So I will just say at this point, we think there might be two podcasts, one that is international rugby focused on the Six Nations, which JB wants no part of. Or else if JB imminently joins us, this will be all matters domestic and speak of the devil. Should we let him in? Let's go.
Oh, ominous.
Hello, gentlemen.
Hello, JB. You all right?
I'm all right. I've got a loudspeaker somehow. Let's see if I can get that off.
Where is your Egg Chasers TMO shipping container, JB? Set a scene.
So my shipping container was delivered today to, by Jet 2, to Le Rosier, one of the club med resorts. I've been travelling for 12 hours. I woke up at 4 a.m. to pack my bag. Had nothing packed. Got in at 1 a.m. last night. Packed at 4 a.m. And it has been a journey. The only time I've been more miserable travelling was when I went on a trip to South Africa. And I think we travelled for like 30 hours. So that was by far the worst 30 hours of my life. This was the second worst.
But at least you got to, now you're with your wonderful wife and children and you get to enjoy. Well, what is it? Where is Le Rosier? I don't know this place.
It's on a mountain in France. I literally know nothing about it. I was just told to show up. This is what my mum loves to do. She loves to get the family together. So it's very much for my mum's benefit as much as anyone else's. And there's 19 of us here.
On Mother's Day as well. What a wonderful thing.
Just looking on a map, you are the east border of France. France and Italy, not a million miles away from Switzerland as well. Your closest rugby towns Lyon,
yeah,
Grenoble,
where we flew into.
You are quite a long way from anywhere further south.
Grenoble's 3 hours away to give you. I mean, France is massive, isn't it? 3 hours away. So we flew into Grenoble, and the only rugby player that my dad really knows from back in the day is Dean Richards. So we had some inane Dean Richards chat.
Very good.
Do you know what, JB? Obviously, I've already explained that this is one of two podcasts, and you want no part of the international rugby. I am fascinated for people to know. I know. Obviously, Phil knows what happened. I'm fascinated to hear how you will explain and talk about what has happened this week. So tell us about your week, JB.
Yeah, okay. So as you all know, the Lancashire council seats were up for election. So One of the councillors is time limited by 3 terms. He served 9 years there. More about him later. And the other one just has to be re-elected after his first term of 3 years. So I decided to run. Now, I have considered how I'm going to phrase this. And I thought I might do like a 2 or 3 minute diatribe about this isn't sour grapes, it's about something bigger than me. No, it is sour grapes. I wanted that position. I didn't get it. And I'm not very happy, to put it mildly. And I think there's multiple things that you have to look at here. So firstly, I just didn't work hard enough. I think that's what it has to come down to. So the votes I asked for, I got. And then I think I got a bit complacent thinking that, well, okay, I've looked at the statements. And so far, the statements look favourable to me. I mean, obviously, I wrote mine. I'm biased, but just reading the statements, I thought, well, okay, if people show up to this vote and they're going off the statements, then I think I'm in with a really good chance, a really good chance. The other thing you've got to remember as well is these positions are, you don't just get given them. And I don't think I took that seriously enough. So if you want to be a councillor, I think you've got to do like a decade on various Lancashire boards and sort of get groomed for the role and sort of put into it. You don't really have an outsider come in. So you've got this sort of clique of people who are necessary because without it, Lancashire doesn't run. And no one else wants to be running Lancashire or any other CB for that matter. And they put in the time and they expect to get their council positions. So you combine those two things. I didn't do particularly well. However, there is another side to this. So the process is the candidates submit their personal statements. You read mine on the podcast, Tim?
I did.
Yeah. And then these personal statements get distributed to the clubs. Then there is a hustings, and in this hustings, what do you think would happen in hustings?
Well, I've seen hustings at like university when you go, but people are going for those positions and stuff, and I understand what a political hustings is. So lots of questions and lots of robust debate where you work out what the differences are and what you can expect from any given candidate.
Yes, that's exactly what I would have thought happened. Go on, Phil.
I would expect something very similar. Maybe a brief personal statement from the candidates, some questions and answers, and a bit of debate.
Yeah. So that's exactly what I thought was going to happen. It was hustings. Hustings, to me, seems pretty straightforward. So in my mind, I'm thinking, okay, personal statement's pretty good. Anyone who reads these four must be in the top two, surely. If it comes to a hustings and I have to field questions, I've got a decade of broadcast experience underneath my belt, and I'm very good at debating anyway. So this shouldn't be too much of a problem, was what I thought. The actual process itself involves sending the statement out to clubs, but then the clubs have got to show up and vote in person. Now, that's not a problem, per se, except for the hustings contains zero debate, zero questions, zero anything. In fact, the only way I got to speak to the room is to put my hand up and actually address the room in an impromptu manner in the form of a question, because we weren't allowed to speak for the hustings. We weren't even allowed to answer questions in the hustings. It just went to a straightforward vote. So I'm not entirely sure what the point was of even having the candidates there.
So surely you would have got better representation by just having an online vote.
Well, it's funny you mentioned that. So, yes, a lot of CBs do an online vote now. COVID obviously made that mandatory for a little while. But, yeah, that's exactly right. So if you're doing it only on the statements, why on earth do people need to be there in person?
Yeah, and just so there is obviously a little bit of information that we know that other people listening probably won't know, which is, JB, what was the attendance like, as in how many votes were cast out of the 80 plus or 100 plus clubs in Lancashire?
So I think Lancashire has about 82 clubs in total, but I don't know if like they're all working. So, you know, for instance, like Eagle doesn't exist anymore. I think Lowstock is sort of merged with Bolton. Do the prison service still have a team? I don't know. They're listed that they do, but I couldn't find anyone there.
Okay.
So, but out of all the clubs, less than half showed up to vote. Now, if you consider Lancashire next to someone like, say Buckinghamshire. Buckinghamshire has 14 clubs. So when they elect their candidates, the candidate can speak to everybody. and is known by everybody. And I'd be surprised if there's a single club in Buckinghamshire that does not put their vote in, because there's only 14 of them. Now, with 80-something clubs, Lancashire is electing two councillors, but with only, well, with less than half the clubs in attendance, which I think is crazy.
Yeah, that doesn't seem like you're getting the best representation. And no. So roughly, how of those, well, if you've got 40 votes available, how did the vote split get done between the four individuals?
So I think I got a more respectable vote tally in percentage points than actually in person. So the votes I asked for, I pretty much got. So I only got 8 votes. There's the guy below me got 4 votes. And then the remaining two candidates, who are, I think one's an ex-president and the other one is the current councillor, got the remaining, like, 30. They got 31 and 30 votes, because one ballot paper only voted for one guy. That could well have been me actually. So, like, it's hard to say exactly what happened there. What has basically happened is people in Lancashire who run Lancashire, and I don't have a problem with this, by the way, that is the system, have decided they want to keep their own people in position, because everyone works hard and everyone, you know, they sort of go into these positions because they're, you know, very highly coveted and they have a lot of kudos and an awful lot of expenses, it has to be said. But on the other hand, this is not what is going to happen next with the higher tackle laws, with everything else, is not representative of the clubs. And one of the things which really, really annoyed me, so the only way I got to speak to that room was by putting my hand up and said, hang on a minute, I've come this way, I want to speak. And I was speaking directly in opposition to Councillor Ken Andrews' report on the high tackle situation and what he has done subsequently. And if you're ready to get angry, boys, this would be the time to sort of engage all of your all of the anger parts of your brain, because it was absolutely incredible what this man had to say. He is potentially the most disingenuous, if not dishonest, man I have ever come across.
So this is the outgoing councillor.
This is the outgoing councillor, Councillor Ken Andrews. So he was tasked with going back to council. He stands up and he gives a speech. And in this speech, he tells us a few things. First of all, he gives us the rundown of what happened at Twickenham this weekend. Who gives a shit? We watched it on TV. Nobody cares. And then he goes, now we're going to talk about the high tackle stuff. Now, I have gone back and I've fed back your feedback. What does he say? World Rugby have now intervened. And I think now World Rugby have intervened as well. That's very helpful for us. I've fed back that you were not happy with the communication. I was like, you've got to stop there. You have to stop there. It was not the communication that was at fault. It was your vote. And they can't get this through their head. So when that meeting started, the last one, about the high tackle meeting, the councillor and the RFU had already written their statement saying, we apologise for the communication. It's obviously the communication that's wrong, not the policy. Like, nobody in that room at that time was that upset, really, with the communication. That was something which Ken Andrews invented in his head as a whole cloth and put it right at the top of his list. So he comes back and said, don't worry, I've told them that the communication wasn't great. No, it wasn't the communication. It was the fact that you made a massive, massive error. So that was the first thing. He then told us about
just on that communication point, it is like a direct copy of how the RFU framed it as well.
Yes, it is.
They said, we're sorry we didn't communicate it well enough, but once you're educated enough, you will understand that way of thinking was their stance.
Yeah, it's almost like, we're sorry you feel this way, but we're doing it anyway. And once you understand it, you'll be fine. As I know, okay, so that is not the primary problem for Lancashire. Second of all, he said something along the lines of, sorry, I've just been distracted by people walking past. Let's talk about his feedback. So I've given you feedback, but okay, so you've given the feedback, now what? Well, now the laws are going to be written and the votes will be passed on the 21st of April. So there's a subsequent vote in the 21st of April where they're just going to pass the laws. So that's that. Thanks. The whole room, that whole room of all those Lancashire clubs was basically against this. And they wanted it fed back. Now, we also were shouting in the room, at the time, we were shouting in the room two things. Rescind the votes. And also, let's have a vote. And what we mean by let's have a vote, like in this room now, let's put our hands up and see who wants this so it's binding. And the Lancashire councillors refused our vote. Ken Andrews in particular refused our vote. So he then gets to say, when I asked him directly, what have you done to persuade the other councilman to rescind this? He says, I've done nothing because I was never told to. The guy is an absolute liar. There's no other word for it. The other councillor, Dave Clark, was also complicit in this. He and Ken Andrew said there's nothing we could do because we need 21 council members in order to overturn this vote. Yeah, kind of forgetting that they are two of the 21, and also forgetting that the staff's motion. So Staffordshire passed a motion telling their councillor that he has to go and try and persuade all the other councillors to change their vote. So if staffs can do it, why can't these do? And the answer is because they don't want to. So in this actual meeting, the only person to ask a question of any substance about this was the representative from Manchester. He was not happy with the outcome of the answer. No one was happy with the outcome, which is the pro game will not be looked at for a while. So we're going to have two sets of rules. And despite that, all of these clubs voted for these guys to go on to council. Now, I don't know what Deacon's view is, but it would have been nice to have some... Sorry, Deacon is the new councillor. It would be nice to have some questions. It would be nice to have some accountability. It'd be nice to know what their views are. We simply don't know. We simply have no idea how these two individuals are going to vote going forward because they've not been honest with us. I don't think the process is honest, to be fair. And I can't really make up my mind how this has come about because it feels to me like the Lancashire Committee are not necessarily supportive of what's going on, but they're also not challenging their council members. And I know that the general body of clubs is definitely not happy with this. Definitely.
Because last time, if I'm right in saying this, there was... you weren't aware of the councillors speaking to anyone in the clubs that you spoke to about...
No.
The vote, obviously the vote was kind of sprung on people, but about the implications, about the potential changes. So it was never discussed. They never gauged what the reaction was.
Yeah.
And it sounds like you're going into the same place again with gauging of the reaction prior to whatever's going to be implemented going forward, which we still don't really know what is going to be implemented.
The laws will be written now. So one of the developments was World Rugby. So Ken Andrews stood up there and he said, World Rugby have come out and they're talking about the belly tackle. Shock horror, just as the RFU representatives who came to speak to us in the High Tackle Symposium were talking to us about the belly tackle. And then when they realised that the room was in absolute uproar, they went, well, we don't know. So they just lied to us then as well. I mean, I don't call people liars easily because it's a stain on their character. But these, I mean, I'm starting to think that they're just not particularly good people. I mean, I can't think anything else. They are so, so dishonest. But yeah, so the belly tackle. Now, it's important, the World Rugby intervention, because in our last meeting, Mr. Andrews was incredibly at pains to say that the RFU can't change a professional game because that's owned by World Rugby. But what we can do is influence the amateur game, and we believe that this is the best thing for the amateur game. Now World Rugby have come out and said belly tackle. They've sort of flipped that on its head and said, oh, World Rugby thing is belly tackle. So World Rugby think that. We've got to comply. So which is it? Do you own the amateur game and can you set the laws for the amateur game? Or do you have to listen to World Rugby? I know what the answer is. The answer is they're using World Rugby as cover because everybody knows with half an ounce of knowledge that the members own the clubs own the unions own World Rugby. They've got the ownership model back to front. But of course they don't care. So they stand up and they just lie. They just lie. So, I mean, I think so. One of the things which I've come away thinking about this is Lancashire as a county. I know these CBs are done geographically on counties, but I think it should be split up. North Lancashire, South Lancashire, East Lancashire. I mean, it's a massive county. And if only less than half the clubs are voting to get representation onto the RFU council, it tells me that this is not going well because they're not getting good representation. Let me tell you what was of interest to Lancashire in this meeting. Of interest from the Lancashire board to the member clubs were the following. There are some Muslim boys that are now playing rugby and they had time to pray. I mean, that's very nice. That's great. We took some volunteers to Twickenham. I would never want to go to Twickenham if there was rugby in Lancashire to be played. But, you know, each their own. There was something about discipline and increasing amounts of racism. And there was something... And something else, right? So, like, there was three sort of, like, kind of very social-type issues which they want to deal with. Meanwhile, this week at level, I think, 7 or 8, I think level 8, we've had 4 home walkovers in the ADM leagues. That was not discussed once. Player retention was not discussed once. The viability of the leagues was not discussed once. The state of the game was not discussed once. Nothing was discussed of actual substance that matters to people on a weekend. And this weekend, they've had 4 home walkovers, and it's going to get worse. And they just don't seem to care. Or maybe they just don't want to engage with the problem that they have. Maybe that's it. Maybe they just want to turn a blind eye to this whole thing.
What's the phrase that you like, JB? You can ignore reality, but you can't ignore the consequences of ignoring reality. So if that is the case, that they do want to just bury their head in the sands of it, it will catch up. But I do think it is, there's probably 2 important issues at stake with Lancashire here. There's obviously the high tackle position, which is for some clubs, very, very important. Like some of the clubs that you've listed, like Oldham and Oral, who have made statements around that they don't think they will be able to raise a team next year if the changes as originally considered were put forward. So there's that side of it. And then there's the more boring, fundamental administrative side, which generally, and recognising the point about multiple home walkovers this weekend alone, but generally and historically, Lancashire is pretty well run, as in they've got a good county team.
They do.
Referees are well organised from every grade that Lancashire operates, from seniors down to whatever the first age group is, under 12s, under 14s, are always historically strong and well organised. And that side is probably doing well. But if the other side, if this looming issue gets bigger and bigger and bigger and engulfs the fact that, if you've got 4 home walkers, it doesn't matter how good your organisation of referees is, because you're not doing the basic fundamentals.
Yeah. I mean, they spent about, must be 7 or 8 minutes discussing the implications of not staying in the technical area during a game. that's important. I'm sure it is. But not when you've got, four games at the same level all called off on the same weekend. I mean, what is that? That is, that's a lot of players, 120 players without games there. Minimum.
Now, my sense of injustice with this and the bit that was sort of making my tummy churn as you were talking about it, JB, comes back to a fundamental principle. As Phil talked about the administration, and it's the representation of it. It's the fact that this appears, if what you're saying is accurate, it appears to be the case that the way rugby should flow, which is that every individual that pays their subs to a club in a constituent body owns the sport, and through the representatives which they decide collectively who represent their views to the RFU, that is the way that the flow chart, that's the way that the decisions and the way the governance of the game flows from the bottom up.
Yeah, I don't think it's always quite that straightforward. I think some clubs are owned by individuals, for instance. But yeah, generally speaking, the clubs own the union, own the CB. CB, or should I say, or the clubs own the RFU. The clubs are the RFU.
Correct.
They pay the RFU to do that stuff.
It's in the name. It's the union.
Yes.
The Rugby Football Union. And there appears to be, again, and this is the story I'm making up. It may not be accurate, but based on what you've said, the story I'm making up in my head is that there is a stereotypical old boys club in the Blazers passing around the fruits of, and I'm sure these people have worked very hard and love the game and all the rest of it. I'm not negating that. However, there appears to be sort of passing the baton around between a clique of people who are minister.
Just on Ken Andrews, I mean, that man is an outright liar. There is no, I mean, he might have done great things in the past. He might be a good bloke to people who have a beer with him. I don't know. But in terms of my dealings with him, and on this subject, he's done nothing but lie. And lie, misrepresent, and mislead. I mean, I can't talk more damning of the man on this particular subject. I think he's been absolutely dreadful. It's an embarrassment how he's gone about his business. I said the two existing councillors, at least one of them showed a little bit of contrition. They're actively reveling in what's going to happen next, and it's going to be dreadful. It's going to be absolutely dreadful.
Well, it'd be remiss of me in a sort of journalistic capacity if I didn't say, Ken Andrews, you are more than welcome to come onto the podcast, because obviously he does not have a right of reply here. So we have. So I'll just stress, this is JB's experience and his perspective on what happened.
He is more than welcome. I would love nothing more than to debate this on the podcast. Give him his platform. Give him his 10 minutes, and then, you know, this is not about debating skill or anything. It's simply about what the facts are, and, you know, the lies in the process. I mean, we can point out all of them, from the fact that from the fact that the study was fairly flawed, to the fact that the numbers don't add up, the fact that the process that the CBs followed was, you know, pretty rubbish and didn't actually consult anyone, the fact that Mr. Andrews lied to the council meeting. When he told us all that he was not instructed to go back and try and change people's minds when he was, the list goes on and on and on. It would be an absolute delight to have Ken Andrews on our podcast.
If I can chunk it up and like just for a second, not be about the minutiae of that, but just to emphasise the point you made, as Phil said, you can deny reality, you can't deny the consequences of reality. This, what you've described, if that is the case, and you were there and we got your description, and if that is the case more broadly, that there isn't this representation of the views of the people who actually go out and play the game every weekend in their thousands, it would explain why there feels like there's a huge disconnect between the way that game is portrayed, talked about, represented by the people that run the sport, and we talk to people in clubhouses all the time. We talk to rugby fans. We get all the emails we get and the messages. We know how rugby fans on the ground that are playing on a Saturday at your average level 8 club, we know how they feel. And there feels like there's a huge disconnect between the people running the sport and the people playing the sport.
Yeah.
And what you've described would, if it's true and representative across the board, it would explain why.
Yeah. So that meeting, So when I left that meeting, I was a bit dejected. I was like, fucking hell. Excuse me. I was like, I've just got smashed there. And there's lots of reasons why. I just didn't work hard enough, didn't understand the system enough, didn't understand that hustings meant no such thing. You know, if I'd have known that there's no debate, and that actually the minds of the members had already been made up, you better believe that I'd be phoning up a lot more people, a lot more frequently. So, you know, there are lessons to be learned from my part. But yeah, I felt really dejected that, yeah, I did such a bad job. Now, as I was driving away, the closer I got to my house, I was like, I'm actually more angry now than I was before. To the point that I'm thinking, yeah, I'm definitely not playing these children's rules. I will never do that. But I might go to every single Lancashire meeting now and just make sure that the new councillors that we have are actually going to do things which they've been told to do, because I'm still a club member. And I can still do that. So the next big event is going to be the 21st of April, and the council are going to be asked to ratify these laws. Now, here's something else for you, which I forgot to mention. Mr. Andrews stood up and he started saying things along the lines of, the RFU or nearly at 1,000 people who have filled in their consultation forms. A game that has 100,000 odd players cannot find 1,000 people to fill in the bloody consultation form because nobody wants anything to do with it. We've got a training course or a feedback course or something, it's actually parkable places where we're going to give like training about the new laws. It's not even half full. Nobody wants to know about it. So he's sort of throwing it back at us, saying things like, well, you know, if you just engage in the process, and all they're doing is running cover, right? They want us to go and engage with this process so that they can say, oh, look, we've consulted and this is what the members say. No such thing. To the point that members don't even want to show up. They don't even want to fill in their stupid forms. And if you've seen the form from the RFU, in itself, it is an outrage. I mean, it starts with a propaganda video. I mean, it doesn't start with the actual data. It starts with propaganda and then goes on to say things like, what further can we do to make the game safer? In other words, what else can we take away from you? So, yeah, there was that element too. But, yeah, driving back to my house, I was thinking, yeah, actually, I've got more of a fight for this now than I ever have before. But it's like, it's going to be a long, old road. But the next one is the 21st of April. If they ratify these laws, that's it, game over. So I guess if they don't ratify the laws, we can't implement them because they've not been ratified. So this might be the next big battle, is making sure that they do not vote on the 21st of April.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
So that'll be interesting to see how that plays out with that round of voting. Because it's got to be, if they're going to change it, because the effect, the season kind of ends June, doesn't it?
Yeah.
As in, yeah, it does. From July, August onwards, you'd be playing under the new rules, would be the plan, or new laws.
Yeah. So I played yesterday. And by the way, thank you, YouTube, for coming to watch the mighty Didsbury Talk H.
Loved it.
It was all right, wasn't it?
Yeah, I always like, I need to do it more. I always like getting down to Talk H. Nice place to go. Nice part of the world, and always have a few good beers afterwards with the boys.
Why though? Why can you not make the first team pitch next to the clubhouse?
This is a source of constant frustration, and it's one of those things that's just, it's just accepted that we can't, but nobody knows why. It can't be done.
There is a cricket green there, isn't there?
I don't know. There's a second team pitch, and the second team pitch is flatter than the first team pitch, but don't ask questions. It just can't be done, and there's nothing anyone can do about it.
Because I would have loved to have been able to keep an eye on Blair Kinghorn's hat trick whilst also seeing you dominate in the scrum. Although I have to say, I described the scrums as dominating, and you did. However, as soon as I arrived, it was a scrum, and you got pumped.
Yeah, he's really good. He's playing against a young lad for Sefton, and I thought he's probably one of their best players, actually. And then, you know, the old wily head worked him out and he was dead. But really strong young man. And I think with a bit of practice, he'll be a phenomenal prop. So they should really look to look after him.
There was a few lessons that I was reminded as well of. If you're gonna chat shit about the opponents, you've got to be able to back it up. And your left winger with a wonderful moustache and nice flowing locks and handy player as well, he rubbed salt in the wound of a player who went off with a yellow card for Sefton, taking the mickey as he jogged back following a Toc H try. And then, unfortunately, when he made a couple of errors during the game, the Sefton lads were cheering like you wouldn't believe when he ballsed up. It was funny.
Well, they're a nice bunch of boys, actually, Sefton. So, unfortunately, they were going to stay for some beers, but the coach went early or some such thing. But yeah, I tell you what, the scoreline doesn't suggest that they are competitive with us, but for long periods they were. And I don't think it'd take much. I think their fitness is a bit down. But other than that, they play some nice rugby. They can play.
Yeah, they played, and it was a good arm wrestle at times, but then Toc H, more clinical. Your back three is handy.
Well, unless we talk about our back three this season, the better. But just on the bloke that you were mentioning before, his name's Archie, and we moved him onto the wing about 3 weeks ago. So our team this week consisted of four scrum halves. Scrum half, a 10 at scrum half, and a 12 at scrum half, and then Archie, who's also a scrum half. And I can't help but think, if we'd realised he was that fast at the start of the season, and started working with him, we'd have an absolute weapon on the wing there.
He is rapid.
He's unbelievable, isn't he?
Yeah. He's very good. But the Sefton boys did love it when only a few minutes after he'd been mouthing off, he dropped the ball over the try line.
If you dress up like Dog Tanyan to play rugby, you deserve it.
I just got to mention my boys Marlowe, an 88-0 whopping of Thatcham.
Have that, oh. Thatcham, clowns.
Brutal.
Sorry, I don't know Thatcham. I have no idea.
Sedgley got a good win as well, away at Hull. Or Hull
that is a good win.
Yeah, 30 points to 16, maybe. Good win.
So, sad thing about yesterday, five of our team left. Just had enough of it.
Is that it for five?
Yeah, for five of that team. Many more in the second team. I don't know what the season's going to look like next year. We'll see. I mean, there's a lot of chat in the club, like, oh, we'll see how it goes. We'll see what the laws will be. I'm telling you now, it's going to be the belly tackle.
Well, someone made an interesting point. Sorry, go on, Phil. You said what you were going to say.
I'm just going to say, so JB, that was officially after 20 years, your last ever league game of senior rugby.
Yeah, I was so miserable all morning. In fact, all week I was so miserable. I actually loved the game. The game was amazing.
It's a good
one of the more enjoyable games that I've had for years.
Yeah,
but you know, I don't feel like a player that should retire. But there's no way I'm playing kids' rules. There's no way when the pros can play their rules. Well, how can you possibly tell lads? You know, that's what you're to aspire to, but you're not allowed to play that game.
I have a massive issue with that. So there was one interesting point made on a WhatsApp group. A lad with a team with an age profile, sort of in the mid-20s, early to mid-20s. And he was saying that there hasn't been the same noises about not playing. And Phil put it, you put it perfectly when we were chatting on the touchline yesterday, saying that this will just speed up the retirement of a lot of people who are later in their career. It may not affect. So we may have like a 5-year period where there's a massive hole in squads from anyone from say 28 to onwards.
So, yeah, I agree with you. I totally agree with you. So, after COVID, the RFU, unusually for them, made some good decisions. Well, not good decisions, but they were thoughtful about certain types of player that might not come back to the game. And two of their three, I can't remember the third, but two of their three sort of groups of players. The first one were lads who basically missed 2 years of transition from Colts rugby to senior rugby. So imagine your last game was like you're a 17-year-old or whatnot, playing against your mates, and now you're 19, you've got to play against men. That's a big problem. Right, so they might drop out of the game. That was one of them, and the other one was guys approaching retirement. Do they come back? Now, I think a lot of them have come back, but when they all go, my worry is that it's a compounding effect because I even did Didsbury with all of our players. Our first team is much, much older than we realise. I mean, it's a very old team now. You get rid of those boys. Now, hopefully, you just get new ones in, and you know everything goes forward. But if those holes are that big that you can't really replace like for like quality, it doesn't necessarily mean that the team just gets worse. It means that other lads who like playing in a good team start to get disheartened and start to step away. And I've seen this multiple times in teams where you know you take away the core of the team and then all the periphery players start drifting away. And I think that's going to be the problem for a lot of clubs, because there's a few boys out there, especially the older ones, who, and we talk about it quite frequently as older players, like, you know, throughout my career, I've always prioritised rugby. I'm not sure the younger lads do. So, I mean, maybe that's a horrible generalisation. Some of them do, but not to the extent that I think me and my friends did back in the day. So you get rid of the core, like the core of these teams. You're going to have to think very carefully as a club, like, how do you replace them? What is the offer? How many players do you need? What's your squad size? Can you support more than two teams or three teams? And I'm not entirely sure that people can. So that's where the problem is going to be with these older retirements.
Mm. But, yeah, I tend to agree. No, I do tend to agree. And it'll be interesting to see, because I think the compounding effect is real.
And yes,
the club that I think of actually is one of Cocker's former clubs, Manchester,
yeah,
who went from a period of time, they were they were always a good club. And then they started paying players, which meant the lads...
Me included.
Cocker included. Rugby podcast, friend of the pod, Nick Flynn, Sedgley and Manchester and Broughton Park legend, included, and many, many others, which meant that all of the lads who were kind of the young lads who'd come through and ordinarily would have made the first team no longer made the first team. And some of them dropped down to play second team, but others just went away and played first team at a slightly lower standard. So that as soon as they stopped paying players, they fell off a cliff like you've never seen. I played against them the year that they stopped paying players and the year after, because of the restructuring of the leagues, we both went down to what was then Nat 1. And they just were in free fall for like 10 years.
I think it's like 5 years between wins.
Yeah. It might have even been more than 5 years between wins. They probably last won in, say, 2008 or 9, and they probably didn't win until 15, 16, something like that.
Yeah, because even when you're free falling through like level five is no joke. Level five savage.
Yeah. I remember thinking it was just remarkable, like genuinely remarkable, that they managed to get a team out every week, because they just knew for 3, 4, 5 seasons they were going to have 60, 70, 80, 90 points put on them every single week. And fair play for the people who kept the club going at that time and kept turning out, kept getting a squad of 20-plus players out during that period. Fair play.
And I was part of the compounding effect, because I mean it was pocket money, and I went there because my brother played there and the family had ties to the club, and so I was excited to go there when I moved to Manchester, and the fact that I was paying a few quid and was playing at a good level was just a bonus. But so when the money stopped, I would have carried on if enough of the lads carried on, but it just disintegrated overnight. And so I was one of the people that thought, oh no, I'm not up for that fight. And like you say, fair play for the guys that did. I do remember going training at Manchester when Neil Briggs was coaching. Me and you went.
Yeah, me and Tim. Well, I fell out with Broughton Park, and Tim came with me to train at Manchester. I quite enjoyed it actually. But then we all kissed and made up at Broughton Park, so we went back.
Yeah, and that ended well, and that continued, didn't it, JB?
And also, I didn't fancy going to Red Roof on the weekends to get smashed.
Yeah, quite.
Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, I'm in a very, very dark place with rugby now. I had this conversation on the WhatsApp group with us all, and I don't think that this game will even be played in 5 years' time. I mean, I think if it's going to be played, there's going to be a professional game that's going to exist only in France. And that's it. Maybe a little bit in Japan. So France, Japan. I don't see how... I think Ireland's decline will be slower, but it will happen, unbelievably. And I don't think there's going to be anything in the UK, really, rugby-wise, at all. I don't see how it can sustain itself.
Put it on the whiteboard.
5 years' time, yeah, because, well, let me just flesh this out. Like, the private schools are turning their back on rugby, which is one of the reasons why the high-tackle law thing has been considered by England First, to protect their private schools, who they believe, and rightly so actually, provide a lot of their players. This is a conversation for another time, But there are some serious issues with school coaching and what kids have been taught about the game and all the rest of it. But if that dries up, that's interesting. If then everything from level three is playing children's rules, where are the players that are going to reseed seed the English game? Because I don't think the Premiership, I think the Premiership is in its death throes now. The CBC deal will make sure it dies. And, you know, we talk about compounding effects. Well, I just don't see which broadcaster is desperate to pay for the next TV deal. I mean, particularly when the French League is going from strength to strength.
It's hard to see there being an increase in the TV deal. There'll be another, at best, flat. Particularly if there's no competition. There's no one else looking for it.
Even a flat deal basically represents what? A 15% drop?
Yeah.
An 18% drop?
Very good point, yeah.
So, you know, even if it's flat, they're going backwards. The French are going forwards. And then if they increase the salary cap, we've already had two teams go. So do we just have like some teams which are okay and then everyone else is terrible? And then the more that England take their players away, because the Premiership teams become more reliant on England for funding, the worse that gets. So you don't see the England players. And the England team is not exactly in rude health. It's not as if they have 15 world-class players at the moment. They've got 15 good players who are somewhere short of world-class, but I'm sure you boys will get into that later.
We will do. We will. When you can shortly enjoy another après-ski beer or red wine or Glühwein or whatever you're having, and we will go on to our other podcast. Is there anything else domestic to talk about? Tim, you wanted to mention
just briefly. Yeah, just briefly run around that. So Newcastle kicks off a round 21 of the Gallagher Premiership on Friday, and they will be doing so without Dave Walder, who has left the club. Mark Laycock has taken over, and this appears...
Sorry?
Yeah, Mark? And this... Laycock.
Oh, sorry. I was thinking of Pete Lucock. I was like, he's a centre, mate.
Yeah. Mark Laycock has taken over, and it appears to be, and I'm sure when I'm asking the questions on Friday, I will try and get to the bottom of exactly what the reasoning was, but it appears to be that Dave Walder has had enough of his players being taken. He had George McGuigan leave immediately.
Yep.
He's now had Trevor Davison depart the club with immediate effect, going to Northampton. So,
I raised this on Twitter and I got a very strong rebuke from the head of media. Now, I understand media men are meant to spin the club's message, but it just looks a bit silly, really. They say that they've signed four players, therefore they've got rid of four players. I don't think they've signed equivalent players. I don't think the Davidson contract stuff has been handled well. But yeah, I noticed this, Tim, because I noticed some names popping up. So the one that I popped up was, is it Thompson, Adam Thompson or Adam Thompson? So then I was like, who is this guy? I've never heard of him. And he's an ex-hooker who's now basically in charge of something quite senior in Newcastle. And I think it's because, is his dad an owner or a director or something? But yeah, it's at Newcastle, because I don't really pay that much attention to them. I should do more. It's all come as a bit of a shock. So they've lost their director of rugby. They've lost their head coach. They've lost some senior players. I don't think that they've replaced them. I think this is kind of... Also, from what I understand, they are probably going to lose Max Pepper, who is looking like he's off to one of the...
Was it Guy Pepper? Clubs.
Sorry, Max is his brother. Oh, or okay. If he's not his brother, they're definitely related. Guy Pepper is definitely
just to balance things up. Maybe Trevor Davison's left Northampton because Carl Ferns has said he wants to convert to tight head prop.
Well, quite. What Newcastle? I mean, Newcastle, I think, are fairly open with saying if the Premiership splits into two, they want to be in the bottom rung of it. They're not a serious Premiership club at the moment. So you've got two teams that have disappeared. One that's shedding players. I mean, there is actually something admirable if they just can't afford to be there and they're saying, look, we're going to live within our means. So there's nothing wrong with that. But at that point, you've got to say, okay, we're not a Premiership club, though.
Yeah.
And the ring fencing just doesn't work, does it? You've got to be honest with everyone.
Well, that is one of the big problems with the ring fencing. It's if you're just looking at the pounds and pence, it drives you to the bottom. It's a race to the bottom. If you can keep getting the what's left of the all the commercial rights deals, you keep getting your X million pounds from BT Sport after CVC take their cut, and you don't have any minimum threshold of spend or performance, and there's no consequences for finishing bottom of the league, why wouldn't you just rake in £10 million and only spend £5 million?
Yeah, exactly right. So Newcastle could effectively be turned into, I guess it's a little bit like the, like the freeloader argument in economics. Like, well, why bother? It's just turned into a vessel to milk the commercial central revenue if they get their salaries down low enough, because there should be a minimum spend as well as a maximum spend to make sure that you are competitive.
Yeah, it's a bit like the tragedy of the commons type scenario.
Yeah, yeah. So, you know, the salary cap is absolutely fine, but, you know, the expectation is you need to be spending it.
Mm. So, yeah, that was that news. Any other domestic news?
Just the Premiership Rugby Cup went to extra time, if anyone actually watched it. I imagine the viewing figureship was probably quite low, but it was a pretty exciting game, and Exeter won in extra time.
I've got to say, the Premiership Cup has actually thrown up some good games in recent years. So there was a cracking game between Worcester and Irish last year in the semis. Sale won it the year before last, which is always great. Didn't let Tigers win it the year before that. Tom Brady with a try in the corner.
That rings a bell. The tensest games that we don't get at this time of year or soon, the tensest games we don't get anymore are the Championship playoff. Do you remember how good they were?
They were bloody good. It's just a shame it was it was
the Bristol v Worcester ones, and
Bristol Worcester was amazing.
Oh, Bristol Worcester! Well, no, that was amazing. That was actually two of the best games of rugby of all time, actually. But the London Welsh surged to the Premiership, beating Bristol, and also I think Cornish Pirates, phenomenal.
Yeah,
yeah, you're right. They were great. It's just a shame it was completely unviable for the needs of a promoted Premiership club.
Yeah, it was totally ludicrous that all the other teams are in pre-season training and you don't know if you're going to get promoted or not. So you can't do your recruitment until after. So crazy.
Classic rugby. But it's nice to know the councils were doing their job and voting on the right structures for rugby.
Are you sure? Yeah, I mean, we're not going to stop you. If you want to stick and talk about Six Nations, you're more than welcome, JB.
I have no interest in talking about any professional rugby of any type ever again, which is a problem for a podcaster.
You're
going to have to get over this.
Time is a great healer, JB. Time is a healer.
I just seem to get more bitter. It's a problem.
You've got somewhere to direct your frustration between now and the 21st of April. Anyway.
Yeah.
But what were you going to say before you go?
Yeah, before I go, I did get a phone call on Thursday, and you might not remember these guys. It is the, I'm going to get the name wrong, CCB Community Clubs Board, I think, or no, CCU, Community Clubs Union, right?
Oh, yeah.
This is the initiative run by Rob Sigley. So everyone's like, huh, right, where are all these guys? Everything's gone quiet. Where is the vote of no confidence in the RFU executive? Yada, yada, yada. Where are all these guys? Well, I've got an answer to you. They've gone quiet because there's no point in doing anything over Six Nations, because any column inches over Six Nations goes to Six Nations. Mm. So they've sort of dialed back their activity. And apparently now they're going to dial up their activity because Six Nations is over. And with England losing, Bill Sweeney and co. are in an even more vulnerable position. So, I mean, I don't know. My initial thought is I don't like the fact that it's gone quiet to start with. But if it fires up again, that might be one of our last chances. So watch this space. And actually, I like the idea of the initiative in its own right anyway. So we'll see.
Interesting. That's interesting to hear.
Yes, it is. So I understand that also they'll be running like road shows up and down the country, which are not county based, but there'll be one in the northwest, one in the northeast, Midlands, London, so on and so forth.
There is one more thing that I want to ask JB, just because firstly, let me say, fair play for having a crack. Like, a lot of people would have just, myself included, would just suffer in silence and just be a little bit frustrated by what is all going on. So fair play for having a go. What was it like after the vote and when everything was wrapped up? Did you stick around? Did anyone come and chat to you?
I just left. I mean, the exchange I had with Ken Andrews in the meeting itself when I tried to adjust the room was pretty tense, to be fair. And I thought, that has gone one of two ways. Gone on one of three ways. I think it made no difference because everyone's made up their mind, which is exactly what I think happened. It's going to put everyone off, or I'm going to get more votes. Like, there was just... I didn't want to stay there, to be honest. I thought, these guys have just voted for the death of rugby in Lancashire. And if this is repeated up and down the country, we're screwed. We're screwed because there's not enough time now. There's not 3 years, a lot can go wrong. So what do we do next? The only thing I can think of, really, is Article, I think, 18.17, which means enough clubs vote, they can recall their councillor. But that does feel a bit stupid when you've just had a council election.
Yeah, that's a bit ridiculous. If you can't get the votes to elect the right people in the first place, a few weeks later then rescinding them.
Well, I think it's going to depend on the 21st of April. I mean, if I was to do it again, a lot of things I would have done. If I was going to run a straight race, I would have phoned every single club. But I thought I was stupid. I thought I could rely on the hustings, which were non-existent. Mm. The other thing I might do is I might run, but I won't run a straight race. And instead just get... Because I don't want to go to Twickenham, right? I have zero interest in going there, right? I don't want their international tickets. All I want is their vote. So I'd be happy to say, look, I'll do you a deal. I mean, I can't do it now because, you know, because they've called my bluff. But I've got a podcast, I've got a following, I've got these votes already in the bag. I'm happy to pull out if you declare that you're not going to, you know, you're going to do X, Y, Z. Like, not vote for this on 21st of April, not do this. You take a hard line. Because that's all I want. I just want them not to sell out the game. They can keep their £30,000 worth of expenses. I don't care one jot about that. I do care about what happens to the game, and that should have been the other thing I considered, but I never thought that strategically at the start of it, and I should have.
One last thing for me, and it's a bit of a shout out and thank you to everyone at Tok H, because I had really good beers with the boys, in particular Lee and Daz, who loved it, both very, very generous, bought a few pints and watched the end of the Wales France game, which was pretty entertaining, and right. Then the whole of the England game.
I had four pints before I got out of the changing room. I got into my house at 1 a.m. At 4 a.m. I was up and I had packed my bag, went skiing.
Ridiculous! That is ridiculous.
But awesome! That's how every man should live his life.
Fortunately, you are one of a kind, JB.
And they've got enough gear in this gym to do most CrossFit wads, including a rig.
Nice, that's good. Mm. You must be in a swanky hotel.
It's pretty nice. Right, I'll leave you two to it.
Good nice stuff,
Jay.
Cheers, all right, JB. Boys, take care.
And thank you very much for listening. I appreciate it. If you're still listening now, it means well. You've listened through all that. You're a proper listener. Thank you. If you haven't considered and you would consider supporting the podcast, patreon.com/eggchasers, or else just leave us a 5-star review. That'd be absolutely awesome as well. And hit subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. Check out the International Six Nations Focus pod, which is in your feed now, and let the boys play.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.